You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Homefield Apparel.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another victorious episode of the Assembly Call, as tonight your Indiana Hoosiers notch the first big victory of the Mike Woodson era as they hang on to defeat St. John 76-74 at Simon Scott Assembly Hall. The victory moves Indiana to 3-0 on the season, and hey, who knows, maybe gives the Big Ten a little bit of life in these Gavitt games. This was a game that Indiana, you know, jumped out and played really well in the first half, had a 14-point lead at one point, but we really saw some old demons kind of come back there in the second half. But the Hoosiers were able to rally, buoyed by some big plays from the bench, and then made the plays they needed to make down the stretch to get the win. We're going to talk about it all for you here on tonight's edition of the Assembly Call IU postgame show. I'm Jared Morris. I'm here with Ryan Phillips and Andy Bottoms. And let's start the show the way that we start every show, and that is with our banner moment. And for tonight's banner moment, obviously there were lots of big plays Indiana made down the stretch, and you could very easily pick one of those as the banner moment. You know, Race Thompson's, you know, little runner that he hit. You know, a couple of buckets that Xavier Johnson made. But I'm actually going back to before the under 8 minute timeout, when it was 56-56, Indiana had lost their lead, and it really felt like momentum and control of the game kind of hung in the balance. And Jordan Geronimo stepped up and made a series of plays that really swung it back into Indiana's direction and gave the Hoosiers a lead, a cushion that they would kind of need as they nursed it down the stretch. It started with a three that he hit from the right wing, as Jordan continues to be, you know, one of the most consistent outside shooters for this team. Then on defense, he had a terrific possession where he called out a switch with Parker Stewart, contained a dribbler just enough so Trace had time to come over for the block. Then he got on the ground, corralled the loose ball after, and then Christian Lander was able to go finish it on the other end for a quick 5-0 run. And Jordan wasn't done. A couple possessions later, he had a nice drive from the left corner. Then he had a nice little bucket in the lane. All told, he had 7 points, and they were huge points, and it was really part of the story of the night, which was the bench stepping up big for Indiana. It was Geronimo and Lander in the second half. Tamar Bates did a really nice job and scored 11 points in the first half, and so on a night when Indiana didn't get as much as they needed from Xavier Johnson, didn't get a lot from Parker Stewart, Rob Finnessy really struggled, some of the young bench guys, Tamar Bates, Jordan Geronimo, and Christian Lander really stepped up, and none of those buckets were more important to me than the one that Jordan Geronimo hit, that three-pointer, to swing some momentum back in Indiana's direction after they had lost a lot of what they had built. All right, our banner moment tonight, as always, brought to you by our friends at Homefield Apparel, now in their fifth season of sponsoring the Assembly Call, and their first as the presenting sponsor for the Back Home Network. And in case you missed it, Homefield recently did a brand refresh of their IU collection, adding 3 new items to bring their extensive IU collection to more than 40 items in total. And just today, they announced a brand new item, a red t-shirt emblazoned with the IDS logo on it, with 100% of the proceeds going to support the IDS, which is just incredible. As you may know, the IDS has been under some pretty intense financial pressure, so this will obviously help them out. To find that shirt, you can go to the second page of the Indiana collection, scroll down to the end, it's right there, buy the new Script Indiana sticker. They've also got it all over their Twitter page, so go there as well. Anyway, if you're thinking about Christmas shopping for the IU fan in your life, Homefield is the place to go, and they probably have something for the non-IU fans on your list as well, with more than 100 schools being represented. But it's important that you shop soon. There's supply chain issues everywhere. Shipping is going to be kind of hairy the closer that we get to Christmas. So get your orders in early so you get them on time. Go to homefieldapparel.com. Use the promo code HOME, H-O-M-E, to get 15% off your order. Your first order, that's promo code HOME at homefieldapparel.com. Wear one for the team. All right, guys, well, it is time to move the ball, find the open man, and get some opening thoughts from the rest of our team. And let's go with Andy. Andy, your bottoms line on tonight's Indiana victory.
Yeah, you hit the nail right on the head. I mean, this had a lot of the hallmarks of the Archie Miller era and even some before it, where you felt like the team should have had a bigger lead than they ended up having at halftime, came out flat in the second half, threw the ball all over the place, and really let the other team back. I think the difference in that in this particular sample was at every turn, this team seemed to respond when that happened. You mentioned the Geronimo play. There was at the beginning of the second half, they'd given up a ton of points. Miller Kopp hits a nice shot on the baseline, I believe. There was another play when Xavier Johnson came back in right away, got a nice drive to, kind of stem the tide a little bit. And so while they couldn't pull away and struggled at the free throw line, again, some of those, typical issues, it feels like they were able to respond in some of those situations, which hopefully gives them some confidence. I think we talked about this a little bit after the Eastern Michigan game when they started to get back into it a little bit, was how does this team respond in those scenarios, given how many times things have gone wrong for them in them before. And I thought tonight you had a number of different guys do that. And I think the other positive you take away is the depth of the team. As you mentioned, they got some key contributions, and we were texting a little bit. There were some guys that looked pretty gassed out there, that Woodson seemed a little bit hesitant to go to the bench at times in the second half. And almost right after that, Geronimo comes in, makes those plays in that sequence that you talked about. Parker Stewart came back in. I thought he played some decent defense in that stretch, even though I know he's not a bench player. But, just being able to change things up, I thought they got a lot of different contributions from players tonight, not just from a scoring perspective. So I think that bodes well. It certainly is a game that, I guess, from a coaching perspective, you would probably you like it in the sense that you won, but there are a lot of coachable moments and things like that that you'll look through in the game in terms of the way IU played in the second half, which was pretty much the polar opposite of the first. I mean, the way that I charted it, they gave up 0.77 points per possession in the first half and 1.31 in the second half. So, per contrast, as things kind of fell off a little bit, but the game against the team I think is going to be one to watch as you go through the season. So I think it's going to look like a fairly good win on IU's hopeful tournament resume when that time comes, and good to kind of escape with a win in a game that probably shouldn't have been as close as it was.
Ryan, your rant.
Yeah, I think that Andy hit a lot of the things that I was going to hit. Is it like you get the win, you're happy, but there's a lot to learn from this game. And I'm not just talking about the players. I'm talking about Mike Woodson too. I think that Andy touched on, there are guys who were absolutely gassed out there, and Woodson continually left them out there. Didn't call timeouts to break anything up when things were going badly, which, some coaches don't do that. They want guys to play through struggles. But Trace Jackson Davis, it's mid-November. He played 37 minutes. Like, you cannot do that all season. I know NBA guys can play 40 minutes a game, 35 to 40 minutes a game, no problem. And NBA guys will be out there for 10, 15-minute stretches at once. You can't do that in college basketball. He needs to trust his bench more. Jordan Geronimo should have played far more than he did. He played 8 minutes. He needs to play more. Michael Durr needs to play more. Like, I'm sorry. They have to play more. They need to give rest to guys like Thompson, Jackson Davis. There was a stretch where Rutgers out-hustled Indiana for a solid 5 minutes. They got off a ton of offensive rebounds. They were getting every hustle ball. It was because the guys on the floor were tired. And when that happens, somebody's got to get in his ear and say, hey, coach, we got to give these guys a break. This isn't the NBA where you do full line changes and have a full second unit. You get one guy out, give him a rest, get another guy out, give him a rest, cycle back in the other guy. You've seen it in college basketball. That's what they do. You give guys rest while the rest of the guys are on the floor, and you cycle them through. That needs to happen. And Woodson's going to learn that, I know, but it's something that, it's concerning that Trace Jackson Davis has played as much as he has early in this season. He can't be out there for 37 minutes a game. That's just not sustainable. It's going to lead to injuries, and he's going to get burned out. In March, you save him up, you play him that much. But at this point in the season, he cannot be playing 37 minutes a game. The team can survive with him getting some rest, and he'll be better for it, and he'll play better. Race Thompson had 32 minutes. I think that's probably a little too high too, with given the fact that you've got Geronimo on the bench, you've got Durr on the bench, and they played a combined 11 minutes. So I do think that's a concern. That was my big takeaway coming out of this, is in the second half, Indiana wore down and St. John's outplayed them. So, I mean, they did get outplayed in the second half completely. I don't think anybody's going to say that. They wound up winning at the end. You're right. They took some counterpunch. They counterpunched when they got punched. They wound up making winning plays when they needed to. But there is some concern there that these guys were gassed and they got outplayed. That needs to not happen in the future.
They were gassed a little bit for that stretch in the second half. I don't know that I totally agree with you, though, that you can't have Trace playing 37 minutes in a big game. Against Eastern Michigan, yeah, he doesn't need to play that many minutes. But in a game like tonight, like, I don't think this is a game for Michael Durr. But you needed a big man who could move. And
I get it. It was
a pattern. I do agree that Jordan Geronimo should have played more. But I will also say, on the positive side for Mike Woodson, you know, he recognized that it wasn't working with Rob Phinisee. And so he adjusted in the second half and decided to put Christian Lander in there, who came in and was fouling everybody left and right, but actually did some good things offensively.
He was phenomenal bringing the ball up. He was phenomenal.
I thought that change was really important for Indiana in that stretch. So
I think
there's a place for balance here.
Sure. Like, I'm not saying it was a dog of a game for Woodson. I'm saying that's one thing that's kind of a sticking point early on that he needs to get a little looser about. And it's a pattern. Again, you know, Trace played 37 minutes against Eastern Michigan. Like, and they played 37 tonight. Like, that's a pattern of two games. You cannot put that on the kid early in the season, you know? And look, I know this is a big game, and St. John's is a very good team and is going to make the tournament and is a very tough team. And I think that team is going to go on to win a lot of games this year. They are excellent. But you find ways to get him 3 minutes in the first half when you're up 12. You find a way to get him 3 minutes in the middle of the second half, and you lower that total, and he's fresher during those stretches. So again, Mike Woodson, this is his first time coaching in college. He's going to learn this. It's just something to monitor as we move forward. He cannot get stuck in not using his bench. And maybe Durr wouldn't have been great in this game, but we never got a chance to see it. You know, we don't know. Give him a chance to prove that he can't play. Put Geronimo in there, slide Thompson to the five. Like, you know, do something to get some minutes for these guys.
I mean, Durr played 3 minutes, picked up 2 fouls, and looked really ineffective in the first half. So
that's fair. Okay, fine. Then again, put Geronimo in for more and slide Thompson to the five where he can play. It's not like St. John's was huge tonight, you know. So there's ways to do that and to get your guys rest. It's just something to monitor moving forward.
So, Andy, two big takeaways from this game. One is this team, especially right now, needs Xavier Johnson on the court as much as possible. It's a mixed bag with him. He's going to make some mistakes, but he does stuff offensively, has an assertiveness and an ability to take advantage of defensive mistakes that none of our other guards have right now. And you just notice a difference. The other one is this team is going to lose games because of rebounding if they don't get better at rebounding. And that's everybody. And I actually thought this was a really poor rebounding game for Trace Jackson Davis, who had a double-double, 18 points, you know, 10 boards. But I thought there were a lot. And look, maybe some of it was, you know, at times he was a little bit tired. Fine. But I think he's got to find a way to come up with some more rebounds that he let bounce past him. You know, 37 minutes, he should probably have more than 10 rebounds. So those two things to me, you know, and look, I thought Xavier today, one or two of the fouls were a little ticky-tack, but he also had a couple of cheapies that could have been called that weren't. He's got to understand his importance and be on the court more, and they've got to get the rebounding figured out, or Big Ten teams are going to make him pay maybe a little bit more than St. John's did.
Yeah, I saw somebody in the chat talk about Phinisee maybe having some kind of calf issue or something like that. I don't know that didn't have anything to do with Xavier Johnson's play necessarily, but just to kind of, you know, maybe that's why he turned to Lander a little bit quicker. But yeah, I think Xavier just brings a different dimension. The important piece of that, though, is he has to understand the kinds of fouls that he can afford to take and the ones not to. I thought, you know, the one where, according to everyone's favorite Stephen Bardo, their feet got tangled up. It looked like the other guy just tripped and fell over. Similar to Galloway's momentum, apparently hurling him to the ground. But I just thought he took a couple, even before he got his fourth, he nearly picked it up a possession or two before that, just kind of overplaying different things. And I'm not sure that some of the theatrics play that well with officials, and you're not going to get borderline calls in some of those scenarios, I felt like. So he's just got to be careful. But yeah, I mean, you're right. I mentioned one of those plays in the second half. I mean, his first possession back on the floor, took the ball, drove it right to the basket. Had the big chance at an and one late, missed the free throw to make it that, and then hit, you know, one of those two free throws at the end. But he gave them a gear that nobody else has. And you still see some of the same things from Rob, where, you know, too much side to side, just too much dribbling in general, too much side to side, not enough north south. And I thought that's where Lander was effective. You know, yep. He did a great job against the press because he really went straight at it, a little bit out of control at times, but didn't ever turn the ball over that I can remember. and really put pressure on the defense, as opposed to Rob, I felt at times, is just going back and forth. And I think this team needs somebody who's going to put pressure on the defense, because the way that things are set up, either with Xavier being able to drop it off to TJD or Race or kick out the shooters, you need him in there to do that. And maybe Lander can pick up some of that slack at some point if he's able to build off of this game and improve defensively. But yeah, I mean, it was, I think I tweeted at one point, I mean, it felt like it was just a matter of the game was going to be decided by how long Xavier Johnson could stay on the floor down the stretch when he came back in, and he managed to not foul out. We have learned that it appears that Woodson is an auto bencher with two fouls.
Sorry, Jared.
Jared, your comments on that can be had later.
It's only been three games. We're going to let things play out. Okay. We're going to let things play out.
Well, he came back in and immediately got his third. So maybe it was the right decision.
Yeah. Sometimes it is. I think with a guy like Xavier Johnson who runs hot, it's probably the right decision.
There's something to be said on that for sure. Ryan, I think you want to say something about Lander before.
Yeah. Before I hit the rebounding. I want to give credit to Christian Lander. I mean, he's been, you know, everybody's wondering, when's Christian Lander going to play? He's too slight. He doesn't play, you know, he doesn't hit his shots. He doesn't do this. He doesn't do that. Christian Lander saved the team tonight in that stretch, in my opinion. And now we're learning that Rob Phinisee had a calf issue. He shouldn't have been in the game anyway at that point. But Christian Lander saved the team in that 6 minute stretch or whatever he had. He scored a great basket. Whether you think he should have taken that shot or not, he scored a great basket. He broke the press with ease. They cleared out for him, and he was. I mean, that's home for him, is ball handling, getting the ball up the court. But he brought it up fast. He would try and drive in, look for Trayce Jackson-Davis, try and move the ball around. He was moving really well. I mean, give the kid credit. He has not played much. There are whispers about whether or not he is in the team's plans. Like, is he going to play? All of this stuff. Where does he fit in? He came in tonight and played a very important role and did it very well. He fouled too much. Fine. He didn't get to play a whole lot last year, and he defends like a freshman. Sorry. But that role he played tonight was very important. And guess what? There are going to be times this season where this team needs Christian Lander to do some things, whether it's somebody gets hurt or whether the point guards are in foul trouble or something. He's going to need to play at some point. And tonight he showed there are things he's very capable of doing on a college basketball floor. You just want the rest of the game to come to him. But that was very important. I think it's worth noting that in that stretch, they desperately needed what he gave, and he provided it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Andy, you want to hit rebounding, real quick?
On the rebounding stuff, I just thought there were certainly in the second half, there were some key I think there were multiple possessions where St. John's missed at least one. I think on one occasion, two three-pointers, got rebounds on both of them, and eventually led to another made three. And I know some of that is, you know, long rebounds on some of those. You've got guys pulled away from the basket that maybe some of your better rebounders, especially with a guy like Champagne. But there were also times I felt like guys made limited effort to really rebound outside of their area. And really didn't pursue the ball very well. And so that has to be something that, you know, was frustrating for Woodson, as it was frustrating for everybody else. I think the fatigue that Ryan talked about could have played into that in certain stretches, but yeah, that was the biggest thing I saw. You just didn't have, if the initial guys right by the basket didn't grab the rebound, the kind of backup and other guys pursuing to the ball from the guard position, it just didn't seem like it was there in cases more often than not tonight. And you really needed that in a game where a team's shooting a ton of threes, really trying to space you out. You've got tons of room for the ball to fall. And it just seemed like at times guys weren't going after it all that hard. You nodded as if you saw some of the same things I did. So, I definitely felt like there was some of that going around. And I think it almost made it worse. They're trying to get runouts and do some different things like that without securing the rebound in the first place.
Yeah. You know, one last statement I want to make as we close segment one here, move into segment two. I mean, look, we're all learning about Mike Woodson, and he's going to have his adjustment to the college game and all of this stuff. But I will say, just overall on a macro level, you know, pretty much everybody who played tonight, you know, maybe with the exception of Rob, I suppose, you know, was really composed and looked like they believed they were going to go out there and make plays. And that's something that we haven't seen in a few years. And actually, Rob did look like he believed he was going to make plays. He just wasn't able to make them. And so for whatever quibbles we may want to have with something Mike Woodson did or that he didn't do, you can already see the mentality change in guys. Yep. You can see it in Christian Lander. You can see it, you know, Tamar Bates, Mike Woodson even said, I saw in the postgame press conference, we got to get Tamar to stop running all over the place on defense, which is true. But then he also said, but the, you know, he's not afraid of the moment, and he's not. And he went out there and made some big shots in the first half. You know, Jordan Geronimo has more belief in himself. And so you're seeing a team that I really believe last year would have let this lead totally slip away. And they might have lost this game by 8 or 10 points. And tonight, every single time St. John's got it back and got it close, someone just went and made a play. Made a shot, made a play. And how long has it been? That is fun to watch. And that comes from the tone that the head coach is setting, because a lot of these players are the same guys.
Agreed. And Jared, you know what else we saw a lot tonight? Smiles. They were having fun. Yeah. And there were stretches where they were not having fun. But I mean, early, especially in the first half, those guys were having a blast on the court. And that is something we have not seen in a long time. So my concerns about the substitutions and all of that stuff is a minor complaint to monitor in the, you know, in the grand scheme of things. But it's obvious that things have completely changed as far as the mentality and how the players feel about this.
Yeah. Okay, coming up as we continue our breakdown of Indiana's 76-74 victory over St. John's, I will point out tonight's meaningful moment that you might have missed, and then we will go inside the numbers to highlight the most important statistical notes from the game. You are listening to the Assembly Call. Stick with us.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is AJ Moye. What's the only thing better than upsetting Duke in the Sweet 16? Celebrating it with friends afterwards. Join Jared, Andy, Ryan, and Coach for the Assembly Call after every IU basketball game. Go Hoosiers.
Thank you, AJ. You are listening to the Assembly Call IU postgame show. I'm Jared Morris here with Andy Bottoms and Ryan Phillips, and we are breaking down Indiana's 2-point victory over St. John's in the Gavitt Games, and it is time for tonight's meaningful moment that you might have missed. You're going to notice a theme on the moments that I chose tonight, from the banner moment to the meaningful moment, and it is a renewed ability for this team to actually stop big runs, which we saw so often last year. And for this one, I want to talk about Miller Kopp. Because early in the second half, you know, Indiana came out and was just terrible. I mean, they were really bad for the first few minutes of the second half. St. John's goes on a 7-0 run. And Miller Kopp hit a little runner. And then a couple possessions later, hit a little three-pointer. And what those shots did is they just kept it from being worse. You know, they kept it from being a 5 or 6 minute drought where St. John's comes all the way back and takes the lead to, okay, Indiana had a 14 point lead, but now it's 7. And I feel like those are the types of shots that Indiana just hadn't hit in the past to stop bad stretches. He had another one later, a 3-pointer that pushed the lead out to 5. And, you know, just overall from Miller, I was impressed with how he kind of bounced back tonight, because I thought early in the game, he was getting driven on constantly. And it seemed to me like a game that he just wasn't going to be able to compete in. I even tweeted out, like, I'll be interested to see how much Miller Kopp is going to play. This game may just be too fast, and the pace may just be too fast for him. And to his credit, he came back in, didn't get a whole lot better at keeping guys in front of him, but he recovered better and hustled his way into a couple big block shots in the first half and was just at least more solid defensively and not just getting killed quite as much as he did early. And look, if you're going to have Miller Kopp on the floor, Andy, he's going to have to make shots because you're giving up some stuff elsewhere. And I think he seems to be kind of figuring out what's a good shot and what's a not good shot in this offense. And he's taking some quick threes and he put up a few bricks. But I thought, and maybe this is just, you know, how things go in a close game, but I thought every shot that he hit was a big one. You know, it felt like one that stopped momentum or one that really just kind of kept Indiana going. And so, you know, we've been waiting for him to break out a little bit. This wasn't, you know, the greatest statistical game ever from him, but I thought he showed that he could kind of recover in game defensively and at least be passable and just be the kind of shot maker that we brought him in to be, because we needed every one of those shots to win this game.
Yeah, there was another with him in the first half. St. John's had cut it to 5, I believe, toward the end of the half. He made a 3 in that scenario. It was just, I think they kicked it over to him. He's just out on the wing or in the corner, you know, made a 3. And my thought was similar to what you just said, like that's the shot that they made that he's at IU to make and to create the floor spacing. And I think the fact that he made that one, so then he makes that play, gets a block on the other end. That leads to a layup from Scoop on the other end. And so like that, a 5-point lead pushes back to 10. But I think you saw then he's able to build on that. He makes a shot out there. And a lot of what he did in a couple of the things he did well in the second half was be able to shot fake somebody. They're flying at him because he's made a shot or two. He's able to take a dribble in and make pull up jumper on the baseline. I think one of them early in the half and that stretch that you were talking about. So I think, He certainly has limitations, as do a number of guys in this team in other areas. But I thought he was able to play the role pretty well that they needed him to tonight. And he made some, as you, to your point, struggled to keep guys in front of him, but did make some plays. He had a few block shots and overall, just as you said, made a number of timely buckets really in both halves to keep things alive, to be one of the guys who stopped some of that momentum. So I think anybody would look at what he did tonight and say, if he can give you this on a regular basis, you would take it in a heartbeat.
100%.
So, book it. That's absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah. I thought it was huge, a huge performance from Kopp. I really did. I thought that first three he hit kind of on the break from the wing, I tweeted out like, that is a huge three for Kopp and quite frankly for the program, because that's what he came in to do, is to hit shots like that when he's wide open. Found him in the corner again, hit a big three, had that, you know, they were overplaying him on the wing, he had a couple pump fake, dribble in and shoot it there. That's what he's here for, that and to step to the line, hit some free throws in a key situation. I thought that you're right, Jared. I thought recovering on defense, he was much better in second half. He's still not 100% on that ankle. I think that had something to do with it early on. Once he got warmed up, he looked to be defending a little bit better. But, you know, it's something he has to be anticipatory of. And look, he was a third leading scorer tonight. 12 points, 4 of 10 from the field, 2 of 4 from 3, 2 of 2 from the line. I mean, that's what you brought him in to do. And so he's also a guy who has some energy, fires guys up, is yelling at them, getting them pumped up, and he's a guy who'll dive on the floor for you too. So I thought this was the Miller Kopp game. This is what you expect from him every time. And so really good game for him, and I thought it was pretty huge for the program to have that guy you can rely on. And again, as you said, 3 blocks too. You know, so it's not like he was a mess defensively.
Miller Kopp, rim protector.
There you go.
any other moments stand out for you guys?
I had highlighted a few, you know, a couple of defensive plays late, after IU had the shot clock violation, which was most certainly not a meaningful moment. you know, St. John's comes back, makes a three after that, but then they get it into TJD for a made that hook in the lane. They get a turnover right after that. Parker Stewart with the steal. You know, he missed some shots that rimmed out tonight. I thought he took good shots. I thought he played well for the minutes that he had. And I think, you know, who knows? There'll be games when I think he's able to hit some threes, but I thought he was solid defensively. But, you know, he creates a steal. That leads to a lob to Race, and then TJD takes a charge of possession after that. So those were, unfortunately, some of the only possessions on the stretch that St. John's didn't score. But we talked about some timely offensive plays. I think there were a couple of timely defensive plays as well. The Geronimo one that you talked about kind of in that stretch from him was one where, you know, he gets a ball. He kind of goes to the floor in the lane where I felt like he was going to call a timeout. But then the next thing you know, he kind of sits up and
he was so strong, arms, he ripped the ball away.
His arms like just reached out of the floor with the ball to kick it out of there. So I think some of those defensive plays in the half where IU didn't make nearly enough defensive plays, they did have some timely ones. So those were a couple of the ones I highlighted as I went through.
You know, a meaningful thing, and it's not just one moment, it was a couple that will go on, you know, unnoticed in the grand box score, the grand scheme of this box score, was just the effort Jordan Geronimo gave. I mean, just in general, as you mentioned, that play, and then the, you know, quick 7 points he scored. He came in, feet set, nails a three, then he comes in and hits a jumper in the lane, and then he has that sweet little scoop underneath the basket for a bucket. I mean, he played 8 minutes and scored 7 points. He was as efficient he could be. Also grabbed 5 rebounds in that span. And I mean, his contribution will go unnoticed if you're just looking at the score, but he was huge in this.
It's called meaningful moment you might have missed. We literally talked about that in the banner moment.
Sorry, man.
I don't think anybody missed it. Coach disagrees. He says Kopp was bad defensively.
I disagree with that.
So
I thought he was for stretches.
He was, yeah. But he made some plays. Okay, it's time to talk numbers. Let's go inside the numbers. This segment sponsored by the Power Rank, where our friend Ed uses data and analytics to make accurate football and college basketball predictions. He also writes an incredible March Madness guide every year, which we will have a special offer for you on once March rolls around. So be on the lookout for that. For now, if you want sports betting advice with a PhD edge, or if you just like understanding sports at a more analytical level, you should definitely subscribe to Ed's free newsletter. Go to thepowerrank.com/AC to subscribe. That's thepowerrank.com/AC to subscribe. All right, guys, let's dissect the numbers here that tell the story of the game. Andy, what are the big ones that stand out to you?
If we want to start in the negatives and get it out of the way, I mean, the free throw shooting for IU was a problem. 10 and 19 for the game.
No yoga actually, for a little these bit, guys.
Actually a little bit. A little bit better than that. 7 of 12 in the second half, although it felt like they all missed in the second half. I thought the story of the second half when they let St. John's back in, it was two things. One of it was turnovers, and the other was offensive rebounds. IU turned the ball over 9 times in the second half, a lot of them really early when they let St. John's back in it. And then in the second half, they gave up 7 offensive rebounds that led to 8 second chance points. So just felt like even when they could get, and the turnovers led to, at least according to the box score, I'm looking at 16 second chance point or 16 points in the second half. So I think you look at those things. That was really what allowed the game to get away from you. If you want to look at the positive, I do think in the aggregate, the defense looked okay against a team that had been pretty explosive. The way I had it charted, they were 1.04 points per possession is what St. John's ended up with, which I don't think is bad given the firepower that they have. IU did force 15 turnovers, which was which was a positive. Bench points, quite honestly, was a big one. We talked so much about the contributions of the guys off the bench, but 20-7 in bench points was pretty big for IU because a lot of the other numbers don't look all that great as you really look down the list. Didn't have a ton of assists, turned the ball over too much. Some of those things, but the bench points is the one where IU had a pretty huge advantage. I think that speaks to the role that depth played in the game, whether it be guys in foul trouble, guys fatigued, and the lift that they got off the bench.
Yeah, you know, numbers wise, what stands out to me, Ryan, and this is a guy that we talked about a little bit before playing 37 minutes, but you know, Trace Jackson Davis scored 18 points, had those 10 boards, I thought the bucket that he hit when it was 65-65 was huge, a little left hook. You know, that's what you want your All-American to do, where, again, it feels like the game's in the balance. He was awesome. Yeah, and, you know, he goes down on the other end, takes a charge. But the number that I find the most interesting from Trace is he had four assists. And I have to go back and look. I'm not sure if he's ever had that many
before.
Exactly
what you're going to say.
but here's the thing. You know, he also had the three turnovers. And I actually thought Trace alternated between some of his best passing and his worst passing that we've ever seen from him. He had a couple of great passes in transition. You know, he had some great recognition when he had the ball in the post to find shooters. But he also had some just lackadaisical passes with one hand. You know, he had a couple passes to Race Thompson. I'm not sure if it was a miscommunication or what, but they just didn't quite kind seem to be on the same page. Yeah. So it was really a mixed bag passing wise. If he can get rid of some of those, you know, bad ones and be a guy who can go out and get you 3, 4, 5 assists, you know, in 35 plus minutes, that is a dimension that we haven't really seen very much from him. And so I thought some of what he showed tonight was really encouraging from that standpoint.
It's worth noting all four of those assists came in the first half too. Yeah, and so, you know, the second half, as IU was not playing as well, Trace did not play as well. He had moments and he had big moments. You know, that, as you said, that bucket where he just kind of took over and scored in a tie game to give him the lead was huge. And they go back on the other side and take a charge. But I will say that I do think there was some fatigue in some of that, the lazy passes, maybe not getting as good a position, getting down the floor as fast. It's not that that's not effort, but your body can only take so much running before you start to kind of, you know, so I think that affected him a little bit in stretches. At the end, he seemed to kind of catch that wind and was involved. I think the assists are going to be huge for him this year because everybody's going to double him. Everyone's going to throw the kitchen sink at him and he's going to have to find guys. And let's be real, it's on the other guys to hit shots. He could have probably had about 7 assists, but some open threes were missed. And we've talked about this team hits 33% from three. We'll be fine with it. Consistently, we'll be fine with it. They had 33% tonight. So, but there were some other chances for some assists for him when he kicked it out to open shooters and they missed. So the number that stands out to me just looking at this box score is Race Thompson had 4 steals. He just continues to fill up a stat sheet and, you know, he was not under the radar tonight. I mean, there are some games where he doesn't, you know, he doesn't score that much or rebound that much, but he'll have, you know, 5 blocks and 3 steals and whatever. But tonight, 4 steals. He was everywhere defensively. I just think that you have to note what he provides to this team is invaluable when he's out there. No fouls either.
Yeah, which is huge. That was a big concern because he'd been fouling a lot and you really couldn't afford that tonight. That's the nice thing about those guys playing a lot of minutes. At least they were available to play that many minutes. By the way, you know, the only other thing I want to say, you know, numbers wise is, God, you know, another guy coming in and getting 30 plus points in Assembly Hall, Julian Champagne, who I love Mike Woodson calling him the Champagne Kid on the pregame radio show. But
to be fair, Champagne should be in the NBA right now.
Man, that guy is a fun scorer. He's like, hat tip to that guy. He's really good. Now, you know,
6 of 12
like to think,
from 3.
I'd like to think we can start making it tougher on guys, but that guy's he's a really good player. Other numbers? Again,
he should be in the NBA right now. Like, he came back. He should have gone.
The only other number, Andy, that stands out to me, you know, for Indiana is, you know, 12 assists on 30 field goals. That's not the formula for anybody, but it's definitely not the formula for the way this team wants to play. And some of that was just, you know, missing some good looks. You know, some of it was, you know, at times when Rob was out there, we had some possessions that didn't have a whole lot of purpose. And there was just kind of a lot of one-on-one play tonight. You know, some of the time when Xavier goes in, he's going to score without an assist. But that number, when this team is functioning better offensively, that number is going to be a lot higher.
I just thought there were large stretches, and maybe this is just because Xavier wasn't in there as much, just a lot of stretches with not a ton of offensive flow and not a ton of ball movement. I think that was, I talked about that already with Rob, so I don't want to belabor that anymore, but I mean, it was just too long where you got so deep into the shot clock and nobody else had touched the ball. And St. John switches up defenses and they'll press you sometimes. They'll back off a little bit. They played a couple possessions of zone and different things like that. So, you know, they are a difficult team to prepare for defensively, but things seem to be on a pretty good track in that regard early on. And then the beginning of the second half, that a lot of that really unraveled. as you go through that. But I did look back. Trace had 4 assists 3 other times, once last year and twice as a freshman. So tied a career high. Very in nice. That. But yeah, that wasn't. I mean, Champagne was just fantastic. I mean, you take him away, they made 9. You know, he made 6 of their 9 threes. They're 3 of 15 from 3, while he's 6 out of 12. Even, you know, shooting from the floor, he was well better than, you know, the rest of the team. So
he carried them for stretches. I mean,
tough,
he really did.
Yeah, tough guy to defend. You know, I think Ray spent a lot of time on him, and I think we'd all categorize Ray as a solid defender. Just a guy who's really tough to beat. You saw in the not the very last play of the game, but the one before that, they're trying to set him up to get a switch to take a three, and he was smart enough not to just chuck up a three. He takes a nice, you know, drive in, gets a baseline shot over Xavier Johnson. That's just a really fun scorer to watch, who Trace I will enjoy watching much more on nights other than tonight.
Yeah. Trace glows late on him too, and he made it over a good shot blocker too. So I mean, it's just a really good player, man. He's gonna be one of the best in the Big East this year.
I think that the one that I would throw out, you know, we talked a lot about the turnovers, but the zero in that column for Christian Lander, I know we talked about that a little bit earlier, but I mean, with Xavier in foul trouble and Rob hurting apparently, but also struggling at times, I mean, you kind of turn around, there's nobody else to go to, and he really stepped in and played well, and was composed against the pressure, something that we didn't see as much of him from last year. And so I think you saw some maturity, what he does to be able to build off of this, and some ideally winnable and maybe not that close games coming up. Does it give him some opportunity to get a little bit more run? I know people had been clamoring for that, and I think we said after the last game, you could see why he wasn't playing a lot, and you could see why people want him to play at the same time. And so hopefully this becomes a performance that he can really build off of, because he was incredibly clutch given the situation that he was thrown in, and really perform with flying colors.
Last stat that's meaningful. 1 of 7 from the free throw line from our guards. That's just, that can't happen. So they got to be better.
Okay, I'll end with one final stat, and that is 6. And that is the number of times now this team has played under Mike Woodson and the number of times that they have won. Now, are any of these teams that they've played, would they be top 25 teams in college basketball? I don't know. But again, for a program that has struggled to build a winning habit, I think it matters that every time you go out, you just win. And they've done it in different ways, against different styles. You can't really ask for any more in a coach's first 6 games, you know, based on who they've played, where they've played, all that stuff. 6 times out, 6 wins. There's a group that's building a habit of winning, and that is that's a good thing, no matter how you slice it. Okay, coming up on the assembly call, we're going to hand out our Game Balls and Hoosier Hustle Award, and Andy probably has to go after that. And then we're going to introduce a new segment, which should be fun. And we'll talk about Indiana's upcoming opponent and more. That's all next here on the assembly call. Stick with us.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Hey, this is Deron Davis. And what's the only thing better than dominating a Duke big man in the post? It's celebrated with friends afterwards. Join Gerard, Andy, Ryan, and Coach on the Assembly Hall call after every IU basketball game. Go Hoosiers.
Will Gerard ever not be funny?
No, that is going to be funny for the next 10 years. For the next 11 seasons we do this show.
I'll let you know if we get to that point, but yeah. At this point, I would say that is not.
Jared, we could take
that out in sight at the very.
We could take that out of the rotation. It's no longer funny. That day is not coming on the horizon.
No, thank you, Deron. You're listening to the Assembly Call IU postgame show. Catch us live immediately following every IU basketball game, plus every Thursday night at our website, assemblycall.com. And this is really important. Make sure you sign up for our free IU Hoops email newsletter. Over 9,000 of your fellow IU fans have subscribed. You get a weekly news roundup. Plus, we're doing our post-game analysis emails. Tony Adranya has been writing those. Join us for free today at join.assemblycall.com. That's join.assemblycall.com. All right. We are going to do now our game balls and our Hoosier Hustle Award, but then we're going to add a new segment called Lingering Question. And that is going to be a lingering question coming out of this game that you have. And we want to get some chat mob involvement. So we actually want to take a question that you guys give us. So be thinking about what your question is. And if we do end up choosing your question, there'll be a little reward. So just going to plant that seed right now. We'll get to it here in a few minutes. But let's start here with our game balls. And Andy, if you need to bounce, you can do your game ball and Hoosier Hustle Award together if you'd like to, since you're on the East Coast.
We'll do them separate zone. And then I'll... we can do them separate, and then I'll probably step out of that. Okay. Game ball wise, I guess in some regard it has to be Trace. He led the team in points, rebounds, and assists. I think there's certainly other guys who stepped up and made key contributions, but again, you kind of get down to the stretch. He made a couple of those big plays at the end. Played all 20 minutes in the second half, but made. Get it tied up, makes that hook shot, draws a charge. So I think I give it to him. I'm trying to stick with what we talked about, where don't just take for granted because he's the best player that he may not win this more often than not. But I felt like he was there tonight. Although I think you could certainly make arguments for other guys. I think perhaps the Hustle Award is probably even harder than this one, quite honestly.
Then maybe the game ball should go to Mike Woodson for keeping Trace out there for so long. Ryan, would you like to respond?
My game ball, it's basically a dead heat between who I think are Indiana's two best players, Trace Jackson Davis and Race Thompson. I'm going to give the edge to Race because he made the final shot, the big final shot coming across the lane.
He did. That was a huge shot.
And it was huge, and it was he had the confidence to take it too. I mean, it was an awkward shot, and he just rose up and made it, and that won the game. So I'm giving it to Race Thompson for 15 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, and 4 steals, and no fouls in 32 minutes, and hitting that big shot at the end that sort of sealed things when they were overplaying Trace and couldn't get the ball to him. So I give it to Race tonight.
By the way, that was such an interesting possession because a couple guys passed up wide open shots early, and it's like, man, I don't know if we're going to get a look that good again. And I guess you could argue whether Race, dribbling to his left and kind of, shooting a little like running, floater like that was a better shot, but he made it. So that was such a key possession for Indiana and both those guys, Trace with the bucket when it was 65-65, that big bucket by Race. I think, just the sheer production alone, I'm giving it to Trace Jackson Davis. You're right, Andy. Points, rebounds, assists. He had a couple of huge blocks early on, which I think set the tone defensively for the first half. The second half defense, Indiana was just kind of hanging on, and I think he left a lot to be desired from a rebounding perspective, despite getting 10 of them. But he's Indiana's best player, and sorry, I guess that's the burden of the postgame show. When you have an All-American, he's probably going to win most of the game balls. So, maybe it gets a little boring giving it to him all the time, but it sure is better to have him than to not have him. So
completely fair to do that. Completely fair vote.
Yeah. Okay, now it's time for the Hoosier Hustle Award. This is sponsored by our friends at Evansville Security Services. Hey, big night for Evansville Security Services here, based in the hometown of IU legend Calbert Chaney and tonight's second half hero, Christian Lander. Evansville Security Services provides off-duty police officers to businesses and individuals throughout Indiana. Remember, prevention cannot be measured, so let Evansville Security Services help you prevent a bad outcome today. Go to evansvillesecurityservices.com to learn more. That's evansvillesecurityservices.com. Okay, Hoosier Hustle Award. Andy, who gets your Hoosier Hustle?
I'm going to go Jordan Geronimo here, although ideally would have liked him to be able to play more minutes to really do this. He only ended up playing 8 minutes, but the 7 points he had during that stretch were just huge. And if I am to make good on my Jordan Geronimo Big Ten Sixth Man of the Year, I need Woodson to start giving him some more run. So maybe this will...
going to force his hand if he keeps playing like this.
This will help in that regard. I mean, yeah, it's 7 points in 8 minutes. What do you want him to do? So I go with him. Race was the other guy I thought of, and either one of those, like I said, I think a number of guys could win this one, but I'll give it to Geronimo because he really did make some hustle plays. Again, that loose ball in the lane is kind of the epitome of hustle play, just to be able to, you know, like I said, it was like kind of out of the sea, like his arms just rose up with the ball and kicked it out on the break, which is awesome. So
he forced a turnover over on the left corner, like two possessions later, just by hustling over there. I mean, here's the thing with Jordan Geronimo. He played 8 minutes tonight and he was the best player on the floor for the 8 minutes he was out there.
Yes.
You know,
100%.
And that's with a couple of All-American level players out there. Now with more exposure, he might not have done that, but for those minutes he was great. So he gets mine too. Ryan,
especially the 4 minutes in the second half. I mean, he played 4 minutes and didn't really get a whole lot of chances to touch the ball in the first half, but the second half comes in cold and shoots that three in the scenario that you mentioned. I thought that was a little bit of a no, yes type shot. Maybe not so different from the race floating to your left, throwing it back with your right at the end.
Yeah, I it's Geronimo. It's unanimous. I mean, the minutes he provided were enormous for this team, especially when, as I've mentioned a couple times, like the energy was waning for some of these guys, and he came in and provided a huge boost. 8 minutes, he was plus seven with 7 points and five rebounds. And as you said, forced some turnovers, grabbed, dove on the floor for a ball. I mean, his energy needs to be on this floor. I mean, it has to be. He has to play for this team, and he has to play more than 8 minutes. I mean, just there's no question about that. Everything I've heard about this guy, he's great in practice. Every time he's on the floor, he's impressing us. He needs to play more. Bottom line.
Yeah. Andy, real quick before you bounce, do we need to know anything about Louisiana, Indiana's opponent for Sunday?
Oh, we do have a 7 o'clock radio tomorrow night, so I don't know a great deal about them. And by the time they play IU, they will have played exactly one Division I team, which was Southern Miss, who they did beat. They're playing tonight, Xavier, Louisiana. So a lot, I'm sure we can learn about
Xavier, Louisiana, huh?
Yeah. So
is that like Indiana, Pennsylvania?
Something like that. Something like that. So, no, I mean, I think they're one of the better teams in the Sun Belt, at least projected to be. But, yeah, I mean, this trip for IU, I think, is one where hopefully we don't have to come and talk about how much some of the guys are playing. And it looks a little bit more like Northern Illinois in terms of the minutes distribution with these three games against Louisiana, Jackson State. And then Marshall will be a little bit tougher than that. But I think you got a few games over these next, 10 days or so where hopefully you can get some other guys some playing time, let a few of the other guys rest and pick up a few more victories and continue to improve.
Good. All right. Well, Andy, thank you. Go get some rest.
All right. Sounds good. Talk to you guys tomorrow night.
Yep.
This is fun. This was fun. This kind of game is fun.
Absolutely. Okay. So let's do lingering questions. So Ryan, let's peruse the chat here. Let's see. We've got Philip. Does the starting lineup change? That's his lingering question. What development have you seen so far on the floor that has made you the happiest to see? That's a good question. Who's a better front court in the Big Ten than Geronimo, Race, and Trace? What's it going to take in order to hit our free throws? Boy, that's a good one.
A lot of practice.
Yeah, yeah. Less yoga, damn it.
You know what? I'm actually not as worried about the free throws moving forward. I think that Tamar Bates can hit his free throws. I think that he missed two tonight in an atmosphere that he's not used to. That crowd was live all night. I think that, Finnessy can hit at least half of his free throws. He missed two tonight. And Xavier Johnson, I know he's hit some threes early on, but his motion does not lend itself to shooting free throws. He should not be the guy they throw it into late in the game when people are going to foul. But, you know, I mean, look, I think guys like Trace Jackson Davis, Trace was 4 of 7. He needs to be better than that. But I think that, you know, what about Race Thompson? 3 of 3. I think his stroke looks much better this year. So I think the free throws will get better. It won't be as bad as last year. It won't be perfect because there's not a whole lot of pure shooters on this team, but I'm not as concerned about the free throws as the numbers show tonight.
Tony wins for funniest question. Although a small sample size, why did we spend $10 million for these results? Why would Indiana pay $10 million to get worse? That's the question that we're all wondering. Still, a question that lingers. Okay,
guys, I got to tell you, I got to say something real quick. Do you know how hard it is to do this show after a loss exactly the same way, like 8 weeks in a row? Like, we got 3 wins in a row.
They know they had to listen to it.
I know.
I mean, it's just as hard for them.
Feel good for yourselves. Feel good for yourselves. Feel good for us. We've got 3 wins to talk about. All right, people. Seriously. Oh, the last 4 years almost ruined my life. All right.
Okay. So a lot of good questions, folks. Folks sent. And if we read your questions, send me an email at jared@assemblycall.com because we do have a little something for you. But here's the question that I do want to hit because it talks about a guy that we haven't spent a lot of time talking about. And I just lost it. From Franciscan Fireworks. Does Parker Stewart have the foot speed to defend or get off his own shot? This is an interesting question. You know, I think right now, offensively from Parker, he is essentially just a catch and shoot guy. Now, that's what he was at Pittsburgh his freshman year when he shot really well. He was a 40% shooter in ACC play. He went down a level to Tennessee Martin, played a totally different role, was, you know, ball handler, primary scorer.
Yep.
And that's kind of been the question. Now, we haven't seen that in part because I think, you know, as the athletic ability of, you know, the opponents goes up, I think that is an issue. Now, I thought tonight, you know, he took 3 shots? He took 3 shots. I thought they were all great shots, and I thought all 3 of them were going in. And they all looked on. So I think with Parker,
the 2 he missed rimmed out. They were in.
Yeah. You know. I really think with Parker, it's, you know, look, he's, from what we can tell of him in watching 3 games, he's not like a Xavier Johnson or Tamar Bates type assertive guy, you know. But I think if he gets an open look, he's going to take it. So I think, you know, you need to run some stuff to get him open. But I also think, you know, the offense is producing some open looks, and he just got to start making them. And he strikes me as a guy that just keeps shooting, dude, because they're going to go in. Like, his shot looks good. So I'm not concerned about him being the catch and shoot guy that we need to replace some of what we lost with Al Durham and Armon Franklin. But I do think it's pretty clear that folks like me, who said that he might be our second leading scorer, need to adjust expectations because he's not that guy. Now maybe he'll show it, but he's not showing the ability to score in any way other than catch and shoot right now. And he's just not going to get enough opportunities with how aggressive Xavier is and how much we play, you know, inside, and how much guys like Miller Kopp and Tamar Bates have no conscience and will just shoot it. And right. That's not a criticism of those guys. So I just think there are going to be some games where he gets lost in the shuffle, but I think that's where Xavier Johnson and Mike Woodson need to make sure that your best shooter doesn't get lost in the shuffle. Because I do think he needs more shots, and I think when he gets them, he'll start making them. Because everything on his shot looks good right now.
Yeah, and what I'm going to say about him is I'm curious to see what happens over the next few games. The competition's going to drop down a little bit, and I'm curious to see if he sort of builds some success and gets maybe more comfortable off the dribble, and that leads to more success. Because right now, you're right, he's basically catch and shoot from the wing. He's in the wing. He's on the wing every time, catch and shoot from there. And his shot looked very smooth tonight. Looked excellent. Yeah. But I'm curious to see, does he try and do it? You've seen Miller Kopp try and go off the dribble a few times already this year, try and battle, you know, be inside. He's battled for rebounds, and then we'll go up with a jump shot, you know, sort of in the lane and things like that. Miller Kopp definitely has a more diverse offensive game so far than Parker Stewart. I'm curious to see what happens over the next few games. Does he try and expand himself a little bit against lesser competition to maybe get the confidence that when it's that he can do it against better competition? We will see. But yeah, it feels right now like he's a catch and shoot guy. Indiana needs those guys. So it's not like that's a waste of a position of a roster spot. You need those guys. And I also thought in the second half, I thought in the first half, his defense was really tough to watch. I thought the second half, he was a little bit better. And that's going to be a development that takes time for him because he's probably never had to play a whole lot of defense before. He's going to need to for Indiana, and he's going to need to in the Big Ten. So, I'm definitely curious to see what happens over the next few games.
Yeah, I just think, you know, I think as a, you know, like as a coaching staff, if you're watching film of these games and you kind of look at the numbers, it's like, all right, clearly our best shooter is Parker Stewart. Like you can, he's the best shooter on the team. He shouldn't play 23 minutes and only get three shots. So that's part of, okay, we got to figure out some ways in the offense to get him shots.
And defense and you might even,
yeah, well, that too. But, you know, you might also go into the Louisiana game and be like, Parker, you need to take 8 or 9 shots tonight. Go find shots, find opportunities. Don't force them, but find opportunities to, you know, to get shots up. Because I think this offense is going to run better when Parker's getting more shots. I believe in his shooting. What's his percentage at right now? He was 1 for 3 tonight. He was 2 of 8 coming in. You know, so he's 3 of 11. The percentage isn't great, but it looks good. So I think the process is fine. Just get more of them and keep shooting them.
Well,
and I think
he'll be good. Like you knew Kopp was going to start hitting shots. I mean, like you just knew, even when he wouldn't make them early in his first couple games, you knew that eventually that guy's going to make shots. Last year, he did not have a great percentage at Northwestern. I think that had to do with, you know, it was a weird season for everybody. But that guy you've seen, he has a track record of knocking down shots. And you watch his shot, you know he's going to make it. So I think that he's going to start making shots. Stewart's going to start making shots. And I think that their role, their biggest contribution is the fact that they have the threat of making a three. It's not even them making it. It's the threat that spreads the offense out, creates driving lanes for Xavier Johnson, creates room on the inside for Trayce Jackson-Davis and Race Thompson or Durr or whoever's in there, creates more space on the floor, which is something IU has not had in what feels like 20 years, but it's really only 4. So that's the big contribution there. Like they need to make those shots. Great. What do we hit? 6 tonight? It wasn't a huge part of the offense, but there was room to operate because they were on the floor.
Yep. All right, you are listening to the Assembly Call IU Postgame Show, part of the Back Home Network. Remember to check out our friends at Home Field Apparel. Use the promo code HOME at checkout to get 15% off your first order. And you can get that IDS shirt. Ryan, have you gotten your IDS shirt yet?
I haven't yet. I plan on ordering one very soon. I'm going to order one for my entire family and support student journalism like all of you should.
Very nice. Very nice. All right, Ryan, it's time for last call. Your closing thoughts on tonight's big victory. This is a big victory for Indiana.
I agree. I think it's a huge first step, you know, for Mike Woodson and for the team. Apparently, first of all, I said when I was talking about their opponent, I said Rutgers. I mean, guys, it's a red team from the East Coast, and they have a player that used to
play. They had a player from Rutgers.
That's what I was thinking.
Who was justifiably kicked out. Did you agree with that call?
Yes, I did.
The grab at the end is what did it.
The grab and pull. Like, it was a pull, and it was not a basketball play. So, yes, I said Rutgers earlier. I apologize, everybody. That was all on my mind.
Which is ridiculous because we don't beat Rutgers in anything anymore.
You're absolutely right. Especially not at Assembly Hall. I mean, it's
Memorial Stadium. It doesn't matter. We don't beat Rutgers. Yeah. This is where we're at.
So yes, St. John's, as I have repeatedly said during this broadcast. But look, it's a big. We can talk about rankings and all of that stuff and where they fit, and there are warts on this win. Certainly, the second half, most of the second half, they were not the better team. St. John's was the better team in the second half. IU was much better than them in the first half. Did not win the second half. We're able to outlast St. John's, I would say. If this game goes another 5 minutes, Indiana might not win it. But they won it. They came out, they made the plays when they needed to, and they won the game. They were consistently punched in the mouth and counterpunched. All of these are very positive developments as Mike Woodson tries to build a program from not a great standing, essentially. And he's trying to build this back up. We've got some wins on the recruiting front. We'll talk about that in tomorrow night's show with Gabe Cups. You've got some positive developments happening within the program, but you've got to win games. You can talk about positive developments all you want off the court. You have to win games on the court. Assembly Hall tonight, for the first time in a long time, felt like Assembly Hall again. And Indiana's team on the floor rose to that occasion to accomplish a victory. Now you've got to one of the things I said all the time during the past coach's era, I'm not going to mention his name, Archie Miller. During the Archie Miller era, coach said tonight,
he didn't detonate the program like other guys.
No, coach said earlier tonight, don't talk about old coaches. We got a new coach now. But yeah,
besides, he's our peer. He's a podcaster now.
It's true.
So good. He's for just him. Archie. Fellow welcome podcaster Archie Miller.
Yeah, welcome to Al Archie. but no, during the Archie Miller era, something I would say a lot on this show was, how do you handle success? When things go well, how do you handle it? Do you build on that success, or do you take two steps back? How will Mike Woodson's team build on this success? That's the question moving forward. Great win. Awesome. Enjoy it tonight. Tomorrow, figure out how to deal with success, because this program has not dealt well with success for a long time. And so they didn't do well with failure either, to be honest. But a lot of times you'd see this team go win a big game, feel like, oh, they're back, they're on track, and then take two steps back. So that's the key moving forward. How do you respond to success? And we'll see how Mike Woodson's team handles it.
As Luke Newhouse reminds us, don't forget we finally beat Aaron Wheeler, who had been 6-0 against us at Purdue.
Wish they wouldn't have mentioned that during the game.
No, it's fine. This is going to be our Kill Bill style revenge tour. Everybody who played for Purdue, we got Mike Woodson now. We're coming after you. So it all started tonight. A couple things I want to wrap up with. Number one, big time congratulations to Trace Jackson Davis for scoring 1,000 points.
Yep.
That's a really meaningful
achievement. I never thought he'd get there, because I never thought he'd be here to do
it. Right. That's why it's important. I mean, number one, obviously you have to be a really talented player and scorer to get there, you know, this many games into your junior season. But it's a fact that he's here to do it, because there was no chance he was coming back. And the fact that he not only came back, but sometimes when you see guys who have, you know, a foot and a half out the door and they come back, they're back, but it's like you can already see that they're kind of, you know, wondering if they really should have come back. He has come back with 2 feet, 2 arms, everything firmly planted in Bloomington, Indiana, to play for Mike Woodson. And we have seen him play as hard and as intense as ever. And yeah, there was that lull in the second half, from him, you know, when guys got a little bit tired. But on balance, through the first 3 games, we've never seen this level of consistent intensity and focus from him, and leadership and all the things he's doing. You know, so we joke about, should we give him the game ball, blah, blah. Man, I hope we come on here every game and give him the game ball, because he's an All-American and he's awesome. And the fact that he believed in the program is such a huge building block for Mike Woodson. You know, I mean, it's not that we'd be starting over without him and we'd be able to win some games, but, you know, you really feel like this is an NCAA tournament team because you have Trace to build around. And that's awesome. And so really, congratulations to him. And the first 3 games of his junior season have been awesome. Everything you could expect. And he's right on track with what he needs to do to lead this team. And the other thing is something that you mentioned, which is Assembly Hall. And there's a couple quotes I want to read. First one from Grace Ybarra, who is an intern this year for Inside the Hall, doing really good work. She says, St. John's Julian Champagne on playing in Assembly Hall, quote, "We'd all be talking and we couldn't hear each other. I couldn't even hear myself. It was a fun experience, though. I wouldn't take that away from it." Well, yeah, you scored 32 points. You were awesome. But the fact that it felt like that, and then even more to the point, our buddy Crimson Cast, our partner at the Back Home Network, he said, "Assembly Hall is starting to get that vibe again. My fellow 80s, 90s refugees who were in the building will know what I'm talking about." And I know exactly what he's talking about. And it's not surprising that it's starting to feel that way even this early, but you could just kind of feel it from the TV. And look, when Indiana basketball is rolling, you win home games like this even when you're not at your best, because there's just like a belief in the building. And that belief hasn't been there. You know, it hasn't been there for the team. The fans haven't believed. But right now, that belief is there. And yeah, it's honeymoon time with Mike Woodson and all that stuff. But as I mentioned earlier, a program that has not been in the habit of winning is slowly but surely, game by game, building the habit of winning. It's early, but you couldn't ask for much more through 6 games of the Mike Woodson era, 3 of them official, you know, and 3 other times out playing together. But it's fun watching this group. They're winning. And, you know, we're happy to be along for the ride, and we're happy to be joining you with us. So awesome stuff. And we will be back tomorrow night. We have Assembly Call Radio, Gabe Cupp's scouting report. And there's going to be 2 other episodes hitting your feed, because Coach Marlowe did another interview with Grace Berger from the women's team earlier tonight. So I'm going to get that up soon. And then tomorrow and I are recording on Friday, so that we can talk about his first 3 games as a Hoosier.
Jared, you got to ask him about the crowd from this game specifically.
Oh, I'm going to ask him. Okay. Don't you worry.
Just making sure. Yeah, yes. That's question number one. What is that like for your first, like, That was his first, in my opinion, tonight was his first real college game.
Like, yeah.
The energy is and different.
He came right out and scored 11 points in the first half and was there playing in crunch time because his coach believes in him. Tomorrow's going to be really good.
Yeah.
Not that any, it's not a secret, but.
Yeah. Why are you whispering?
Okay. The guy's going to be really good. I don't know. Just to change things up. Okay, that's going to do it. If you want to see us do the show live and be part of the live chat, make sure that you subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/assemblycall. And don't forget to go to join.assemblycall.com to join our free email newsletter. Special thank you to Bob Thompson for the music that you hear on the show. And special thanks to John Ringer of Riggs Design for designing our logo, which we're going to be releasing here soon. So be on the lookout for that. And thank you for listening. We'll be back to talk IU Hoops again with you tomorrow night. Until then.
Take it from me, Robert Johnson. Keep your elbows in and your eyes on the rim. And go Hoosiers.
All right, I got to get out of here, folks. Thank you.
I like everything about that.
I bet you do, Coach. Bet you do. Even though you're being second-guessed by Ryan Phillips 3 games into your tenure.
Hey, it's a concern.
It is not a concern. Maybe it's a question. It's not a concern.
No, okay, fine. I'll downgrade it. It's something to monitor. That's what I said on the show. It's something to monitor moving forward. Does he expect his best player to play 37 minutes in any close game?
I hope he does in the big ones. Just don't let him play that many against Eastern Michigan.
In February and March, I agree with you, but it's early in the season. I don't want the kid to burn out. He's college.
Well,
kid.
He should have plenty of time against Louisiana, Jackson State, and Marshall. Fingers crossed. Don't take anything for granted.
Yes.
But hopefully he's only playing like 25 minutes in those games, getting his numbers and getting out.
Yeah. No, I agree. Look, again, it's just something that the thing I noticed is just his substitution patterns are very NBA-like because he's been an NBA coach. And you leave guys together for long stretches of time in the NBA, and then the NBA, you make a line change, basically. Take three out and put three new in, and then you swap the other two, you know? And then you bring three back, and then you swap, you know? So that's the way they do it. And they, you know, the starters play like the first 10 minutes straight, sit for like 7, and then come back and finish the first half. And then they start the second half, play about 10, you know, and then sit and finish the game. You can't do those substitution patterns in college. You just can't. And so it'll just be interesting to see how quickly. I mean, I'm sure someone like Thad Mata could get to him and be like, hey, you know, stagger your subs a little bit more, you know, try and work guys in while you're resting your big guys, steal minutes here and there for your guys to get some rest. I mean, when they were up 12, they could have taken Trace out for a few minutes, you know, easily and been fine.
Hopefully Michael Durr improving his health and conditioning makes that easier because you feel more comfortable. Cause that's a guy that can score some points for you.
Agree.
You know, so that'll
and
be
he can move out on the floor. He can spread things out. You could do some 5 out stuff to create driving lanes. I mean, there's plenty you could do with that. But yes, I as I said, it's a minor concern at this point. Like on my level of like where I am with Mike Woodson, it's not that big a deal, but it's worth monitoring because there was a stretch tonight where St. John's got back into the game. It's red teams from that area of the country. I'm sorry. Where St. John's got back into the game because those guys were clearly tired and they caught their second one at the end, but they were clearly exhausted for a little bit and they weren't hustling after the ball. They weren't getting rebounds. You know, there was one possession where St. John's got like 3 straight offensive rebounds and it was just a lack of burst from the guys on the floor to get to the ball. So you just got to, you know, you got to monitor stuff. And when you see that happen, you got to sub some guys out and give them a break or call a timeout, you know, and get them some rest. So again, he'll figure it out. He's a smart guy. I don't think this is like, this is going to impact the program for years to come. I just think that it's something that, thanks for that one. That's good.
Dabney with the pun of the night.
But I do think it's something that he's going to have to learn as this season progresses, that you cannot coach the way you did in the NBA exactly. Stony Brook.
All right. You want to give us, I know we got to get out of here. Give us, for those who have hung around, give us the 1 minute preview of the Gabe Cupp scouting report, other than he knocked down three straight 3-pointers when he was 15 in front of LeBron James, which was awesome.
Well, you just stole my thunder right there. No, I hope everybody saw how important it is that LeBron shared his commitment on his Instagram and said, "Great job, nephew," or something like that.
He has like 450,000 Instagram followers. He's gonna make some name, image, likeness bank. He's gonna be way out of our league.
We're not
getting any interview shows with Gabe Cupps, I don't think.
I have not done the entire film study on him yet. What I like about him is I feel like he's a complete guard. He looks smaller than he is. He's a bigger guard. He's like 6'2". But he's kind of skinny, so you just assume he has kind of a quick, small guy game, but he's actually got some length and he's decently tall. Son of a coach who, you know, has all of those attributes that you love to see. I love his defense. That's what surprised me the most watching this is I love just how he's going to be a pest defensively. Like whether or not he's an all Big Ten defensive guy, he's just going to be a pain in the ass to play against. And I love that. 4-year player for sure. Can shoot it, can drive it, finish off the rim and at odd angles, but he also is good at setting up his teammates, more of a point guard. There's a lot to like there. Is he a perfect player? No, he's got some stuff to work on, but really looks like he's going to be a great college player in the mold of, and I'm not comparing him to this guy, but in the mold of like an Aaron Kraft or somebody like that who stays 4 years, improves, and means a lot to your program without necessarily being the most talented player on the floor ever in his career. So really nice pickup for Indiana. And the other thing I'll say, and I mentioned this in the community, is that he's a guy who they went all in on. You have to get the guys you go all in on, or at least most of the guys you go all in on. And so they went all in on him. They really wanted him and they landed him, which is big for Mike Woodson and his staff to have pulled that off.
100%. That's the kind of
there's a couple guys they've gone all in on
programs around.
Yeah. And there've been a couple guys they've kind of pushed all their chips in on and not gotten. So this is good that there's building that pattern of that. And the 2023 class has two good guards, now needs a big man and maybe a wing depending on attrition, but definitely need to find a big man and you've got a long time to do it.
Boy, when you start plotting out the guard rotations for the next few years, it's fun.
It's not bad. Jared. It's not bad.
It is fun. All right. Well, Ryan, thanks for being here. Nice to have you in the community too.
Of course.
Good to have you in there. Thanks, everybody, for being here. We'll talk to you all tomorrow night. I won't be on the show tomorrow night, but somebody will.
You're going to miss out.
Sunday, I know. I'll listen in. All right, y'all. Have a good one. Talk soon. Go Hoosiers.
Here I come, Mrs. Stansoni.